Welcome to another edition of African Analysis, brought to you by the Johannesburg Business School. And we're thrilled, as always, to have JJ Cornish with us to tell us all about what's going on the continent of Africa. A very, very important way to spend at least a little bit of that time that you have so little of. Get informed about what's going on in our immediate neighborhood here in this continent. So first things first, JJ, how are you?
I'm immensely well, and I'm very glad that you've asked.
And Pretoria is looking very pretty with all its jacarandas this time of year. That's where you live.
Absolutely gorgeous. You know, these long avenues that you could take a picture and it looked like jacarandas running off into infinity. But my nervous neighbors have all put fences, you know, around the whole suburb. And so those fences break up this beautiful vista, which is a pity. But I don't believe the fences make us any safer either. So, you know. That's my bugbear.
A little known fact about this, and there is a bit of a diplomatic story to it. Those jacarandas were not planted there by the, the voortrekkers. When were they planted, and who were they a gift from?
They were a gift from Brazil. Although I don't know, you and I have discussed the white jacarandas. Now, that could be an old apartheid trick, eh? That run along Herbert Baker, give you the best view of the purple city bowl at this time. If you're coming from Fountain Circle, you take the first turn to the right, and you go up Herbert Baker. Beautiful street, beautiful, beautiful street. I looked at buying a house there, but there's absolutely no parking outside, you know, because it's the houses run straight down. It's beautiful. But anyway, that's one thing. And I love telling people about it because many, many Pretorians are unaware of the fact that there is this white jacaranda, long avenue of white jacarandas, about 3 or 4 kilometers of it.
Absolutely. All right, let's turn our attention a little further north. Russia is unsurprisingly getting involved in and interfering in everybody's business. That's never happened before. Russia particularly involved now in U.S. health programs in Africa. Why do they have a problem with this? I mean, people like Bill Gates, who famously is doing his best to prevent people from dying from malaria, which is a laudable cause. I think there are very few people in the world who would have a problem with that. But Russia are trying to spread fear and mistrust of the West. I remember a similar thing happening when polio vaccines were introduced all over Africa, right?
Yes, and they were saying that that was Boko Haram and others who wanted to stop that. And they were saying that it was causing, infertility and that sort of thing. But you say Russia never interfered before. Well, I thought we'd agreed, you and I, that I would do the jokes on this crossing. But anyway, here we have the malaria, TB, and HIV. And Bill Gates has been doing a lot of work on that. And so, of course, has the United States. But Russia is undermining that all the time. And then they do this by bringing in African journalists to report these things. And it's all misinformation, badly used social media. I think the social media has been an absolute curse. We see it happening across the Atlantic now in the United Nations, the United States election. And Russia is starting to use it with great expertise. But what they've done is, you know, and it's a real sore point because malaria, on the latest figures, 2022, killed 608,000 people in Africa. It's caused more deaths in Africa than HIV and even TB. It's the greatest cause, and most of the victims are under 12 years old. So it's very, very sad. They've got Burkina Faso, Ghana, Uganda, where this they're working on it. And as you know, I'm a malaria bore because I nearly died of it. And they have this vaccine that is working now, two vaccines. So we're at a time where we're beating it. In fact, I'm here to tell you that Egypt claims to have beaten malaria. They say that they are now completely malaria free. That's a development in the past day. So the plague that the disease that plagued the pharaohs those thousands of years ago is now part of history in Egypt. I do believe that at the time of Ian Smith, even Zimbabwe in those days, Rhodesia maintained that it was very near malaria free, but of course things went backwards. But they had these malaria checks all the time and vehicles going through dips and that sort of thing. So it's something that can be beaten, you know, sleeping under nets, all those. Well, there's so many ways, but the vaccine is the breakthrough thing. And we hope that whatever nefarious business Russia is up to in trying to undermine and bring fear about, of Western influence, it's not going to work. Burkina Faso is the one where you know, they've been doing a lot of work there too, but the Russians are saying they haven't. They basically trying to raise a mosquito there, develop a mosquito that does not spread malaria. I mean, we have them all over here, but I think taking Anopheles and the one that spreads it and beating malaria in that way. But the Russians are saying, no, it's not in fact reducing malaria. They're increasing it there. And they're doing that without any scientific evidence. And, you know, have you heard that line before on social media? They or he or she is saying that without any evidence. And yet millions of people read it and believe it.
Yeah. You know, there's unfortunately, mis and disinformation have been rubbished as much as the bad news which they purport to spread, and now we're not sure which we can trust and which we can't. But I would say it's a pretty good rule of thumb that if the Russians are telling you something here in Africa is happening, then they want you to believe that the opposite is happening. They want to on purpose confuse and dement you so that you can't make a decision. I'm pleased that Egypt have almost succeeded. They say they're malaria-free. I mean, that's a very big deal because since the time of, as you say, the pharaohs, this has been a plague for that country. And the Nile is obviously one of the most important water sources in the world, let alone in Africa. And for them to have done that is a very large and very successful achievement. Congrats.
Indeed. Big story on the Nile. You know, they've got this cooperative framework with signed by 10 riparian countries, but Egypt and Sudan have not yet signed. Ethiopia pushing very, very hard. And they are, you know, they've just built this GERD, the great Ethiopian Renaissance Dam. And they're wanting it, you see, because Egypt and Sudan in the 1951 agreement were given all the rights to the Nile. And none of the other countries got it. Now all the countries along the banks, that's 11 of them, are saying, wait, We have every bit of right to these waters and to the facilities. So a big development. The Nile will be. It's the beating heart of Northeast Africa.
So, JJ, let's talk about satellites because they're all the rage at the moment. And we know that in America during this last and quite devastating hurricane, Elon Musk was able to wrest his satellites from their normal commercial activities and allow them to provide free satellite for people who were in hurricane-torn areas. We've obviously got a continent where there's still huge pockets of Africa which are completely, I was going to say unperturbed by, but let's say inaccessible to people who want to get on the internet, be able to communicate, be able to use cell phones. But that's going to change, and I see lots and lots of governments rushing to spend enormous amounts of money on satellites that they can't really afford. What's going on?
Well, you know, I don't know what they can afford, but certainly this has become considerably cheaper, launching satellites. We do not have a launch pad anywhere in Africa. We have a landing strip for the space shuttle in Berbera in Somaliland. You know, it's 10 kilometers that was built by the Americans, but nobody's thought of building a space launching pad here. But we had, you know, that 61 satellites by 17 African countries had been launched up to date, and there are dozens more to come. And you know, but they most of them go from commercial launch pads in the United States or in Europe or so on. South Africa, God bless us, was the first in 1998. We sent the first satellite in African country to send the first satellite into space. Senegal is the latest on August the 16th. And this was encrusted with solar panels and let go of those shortly after launch. And they are now wandering around space talking about telecommunications, crops, weather, other observations, and this is so important. But as I mentioned, the cost has fallen significantly. You know, Djibouti's got bases, and it's got the only Chinese military base in Africa. But Zimbabwe even has put a satellite into space. So that technology is going to increase, and it's going to be the better for us.
Yeah, let's hope so. I mean, in the end, this is a good story. I was worried you're going to tell me it was another way for, you know, corrupt leaders to hide away money. But I mean, if it means people can get connected, and we know that we're a very mobile first continent, we've developed technologies and capabilities in mobile technology in Africa, which they still haven't really cottoned onto in parts of the first world, the so-called yes. first world. So we've got things to be a little bit optimistic about, if you ask me. Yes, so far,
we skipped a generation on, you know, fixed line telecommunications. Many countries have never had them, suddenly got the mobile phone. And that's why, in terms of access to mobile phones, we have an extraordinary number of those. But what can those mobile phones actually pick up without the satellites up in the sky? That's the point. And that will improve enormously, exponentially, I think, once we have more satellites up there.
JJ, we mentioned Boko Haram earlier, who were the ones who caused all that trouble with the polio vaccine some years back. And they're in the news again and are unlikely to leave the news anytime soon. But tell me, the latest is that the Nigerian government are resettling people who were actually kidnapped by Boko Haram. How's all of that going?
And sent away. You know, Boko Haram started in 2010. Boko Haram means Western education is banned, is prevented, is haram. And, haram. 3.3 million people have been displaced. They were sent to displacement camps or to newly built host communities. And now there's a pressure of those, and the government is sending people back to the areas they came from before those people, and assuring them that they will be safe. But those people themselves are not sure of this at all. And the government is trying to suggest by this that the conflict is over. But really, the analysts are saying that it's insecurity and lack of protection in the camps where they are that's putting them, forcing the government to send them elsewhere, back to where they came from. So, and they go to the Lake Chad Basin. You know, the Lake Chad, of course, has shrunk to a fraction of what it once was because of overgrazing, irrigation taking, and off the rivers feeding it and off the dam itself. And it's a fraction of what it used to be. So there's a lot of land that people can settle on, hoping, of course, that Lake Chad doesn't, well, we hope that Lake Chad rises again, but it doesn't look like doing that. So there is land. But and the Nigerians, you know, they've spoken so many times of beating or being close to beating Boko Haram and not come close to it. So you can't blame the people for saying it's too early to send us back. We're not going to be safe.
Sorry. It must be very, very insecure for for people in Nigeria to know whether or not they will be able to just conduct themselves normally, to go to work, to educate their children, to be able to relax in their own homes, knowing that these lunatics are out there and that they could come at any time.
Absolutely. And I mean, the same is happening, I think, in northern Mozambique, in Cabo Delgado. You know, you can't pretend that everything is all right when it's plainly isn't.
Yeah, I mean, how are we doing in terms of on this continent fighting back against Al-Shabaab on the east coast and Boko Haram on the west?
Well, you know, we've kicked Boko Haram out of the cities, but from the rural areas, they managed to make incredible attacks into the cities, very deadly attacks, and so they're still operating, and nobody can get rid of them. Now, the Turks are training. We spoke about that the last time we spoke, training the Navy and upgrading the military to do this. The Turks have taken sort of Somalia under their wing to try and improve it militarily and the security thereof. So there's some progress you could say there, but Boko Haram is still operating. I'm not saying with impunity, but certainly whilst they have no bases in the cities, they still operate because they're an idea. And I think maybe the Israeli government needs to do a real study of that. You think you've driven people out, but essentially they'll come back when they need to. And that's what guerrilla warfare is all about.
Yeah, I think we almost need to get the Israeli government to come and do a little Gaza on them. I mean, it might be the only way to get things back to balance. I mean, certainly they're redrawing the maps of the Middle East, whether we like it or not. And I think it's preferable to what was there before. We'll see. You know, Saudi Arabia on board. It seems everyone except Qatar and the Palestinians themselves are on board with what's going on, quietly supporting it, pretending, you know, they can't give their full voice to support. It's very interesting to see what's going on there. And obviously there are knock-on effects. You know, while the Middle East is chaotic, it has long tentacles into other parts of the world. And one of those tentacles ends quite deep into our own continent on both sides of it. We've got to be quite aware of these things. Can't just hide your head in the sand.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, JJ, it's always a pleasure to speak to you, and thank you. Please go and enjoy the jacarandas, and I hope Pretoria gets some nice rain, and we will catch up with you soon.
I'm looking forward to that.
Very good. JJ Cornish and African Analysis, this day brought to you by the Johannesburg Business School. You've got to go and see what they're up to make sure that you are up to speed with all the possibilities and all the potential of making this continent the powerhouse it should be. All you need to do is go and check them out. You can find them very easily. We will put the links in this podcast. That's the Johannesburg Business School.